Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages here in Kilkenny and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. And we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5 and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. Now while we're on air we'd love to hear from you so please feel free to send in any texts or questions or comments. The easiest way to get in touch is by text to 086-353-7782. That's 353-7782. Now, before we went on air, I was just arguing with Mags about a tip that she keeps getting on horses. And whenever she passes the tip on to me, the horse never wins. But then, of course, in the next race, it comes in first at 33-1 or 133-1 or something like that. So I'm not listening anymore.
The next time.
I'm just keeping the headphones on.
You should always listen to me.
No, headphones are staying on from now. I've lost so much money on your horses. Anyway, no tips today. We leave that to the lads on the sports show.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
But we do have a very, very busy show today because in food news, my God, there's so much going on. We could fill the show with just food news this week. There's so much in the news. So we'll be touching on all of the stories there. In the second part of the show, we're going to be talking to chiropractor and Kilkenny man Michael Mahoney, who has the John's Green Chiropractic Clinic down on John's Green. And he's going to be talking to us as part of our series of slots during January on kind of self-improvement and small changes that we can make to improve our well-being and life. He's going to be talking to us a little bit about the pitfalls of the office life or things that we're doing wrong maybe in the garden or things that we can change how we do to improve our overall fitness or our posture or our health in general. And then in the final part of the show today, myself and Mags paid a visit to the glamorous sounding Wexford Slobs.
And or Wexford Wildfowl Reserve.
The Wexford Wildfowl Reserve, I have to say, sounds a lot better than Slobs.
It does, yeah.
Such a name. But such a magnificent place and a fabulous place for spotting birds. So if you're interested in birds and bird spotting, listen up later on. And then, of course, there's a few jobs to do in the garden at this time of the year, as usual. Now, Mags, how was your week?
Good. I'm actually feeling quite nostalgic.
Oh.
6 years in Kilkenny this week.
6 years?
6 whole years.
6 years. Yeah. And you didn't come straight across the border from Tipperary?
No, via Dublin.
Dublin
for 12, 13 years.
Oh, my God.
I was out this morning on the horse, actually, and I'd kind of nearly forgotten about it. I did remember it during the week, but...
You forgot about the horse?
No, I remember him all right. It's such a beautiful morning in Kilkenny. And
stunning.
Stunning, just the landscape. And I was kind of thinking, gosh, this was good. So I was feeling nostalgic and happy.
Well, I have to say, I have absolutely no regrets myself about moving to this fabulous city and this gorgeous county. I love it to bits.
Now, if I was any good, I could actually write a blockbuster on the past 6 years. Maybe that's what I should be doing instead of out riding around on the horse.
Mm. If I had any time, I could write a blockbuster on the last 6 days. But anyway, there you go.
You should do
it. It's all about time, really, isn't it? It's all about time.
But it did feel like spring this morning, didn't it?
It did.
You could nearly feel the grass just wanting to grow. I suppose it has been growing, really. But and there's lots of honeysuckle. The little leaves are out on the honeysuckle. Which looks nice. It just gives a, you know, someone said hope was created on the same day as spring, and I think that's absolutely completely
what
true.
What a marvellous expression.
Isn't
I'm going to try and remember that. Hope was invented on the same day as...
Created on the same day as spring.
My God, I'm going to remember that. I walked out of the house when I was leaving to come into the radio earlier on, and there was a wood pigeon cooing in the trees outside the house out of Crowan. And to me, that's the sound of being by a river fishing in the summertime.
Oh.
And the sun was shining. I felt a bit of warmth on my face and I heard the pigeon and my God, I was just transformed. It wasn't January at all. It was sometime later in the year and I loved to hear it.
And there was lots of midges out this morning, actually, which did feel, you know, we had the sun and the midges and a little bit of growth in the hedgerows. It did feel like...
It doesn't feel like January at all.
No.
But there is going to be a bit of a cold snap coming, they say.
Apparently, we've been hearing about this, yeah. So let's see what happens.
There was a
enjoy today for today.
There was a fantastic weather report on the BBC about 3 days ago, and it was widely shared on social media. It was the most entertaining weather forecast I'd ever seen. This poor man came on. It wasn't their main evening forecast because the guy was just in a shirt with an open collar. So he wasn't in the full suit. So it was either late evening or one of the mid-afternoon ones. But he came on and he said, now, weather's about to change. This weekend and all of next week, listening to the European, or using the European model, there's going to be driving wind in from the east. It's going to come from mainland Europe. It's going to be freezing. There's going to be snow, la, la, la. Painted a horrible picture. And then he moved over to the other side of the map of the UK and said, but if you look at the American model, there's going to be a high pressure moves in. It's going to sit over the UK. There's going to be winds from the west in off the Atlantic Ocean. It's going to be unseasonably warm and dry.
So take your pick.
So it was basically from this weekend, we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. I thought it was hilarious.
Look out the window in the morning and then we'll know.
Look out the window, exactly, exactly. And if you're listening to the show on Monday, we'd love you to text in and tell us what the weather's going to be like here on Friday. Now,
that'd be handy.
There was, we have to mention it, I suppose, the Lancet Food Report.
Yeah, yeah.
A big, big publication, got lots of coverage during the week.
It's clearly an awful lot of money behind it and...
Clearly.
Maybe it was just for a distraction from other things going on. I don't know. You never know how these things work and timing and everything.
Just a little bit of background for listeners. So the Eat Lancet Commission on Food, Planet, Health brings together more than 30 world-leading scientists from across the globe to reach a scientific consensus that defines a healthy and sustainable diet. Sustainable being the real theme of the report that they published this time. Because they were trying to look at how what we eat has an impact on the climate. How did it go?
Well, what they're proposing doesn't really make any sense to me. Not for this country. So, like that we change our diet, so we cut out an awful lot of meat. But we're also cutting out what we can actually produce here. And importing foods like soy and chickpeas and things from like the other side of the world. That makes absolutely no sense. And also... we're not going to suddenly go, like, cut our meat by 80%. That's just not going to happen.
It's actually 90%.
90%, sorry, yeah, that's right. That's not going to happen. What are they talking about, like, a half a sausage a day or whatever
seven,
it was?
7 grams of meat a day.
Yeah, half a meatball a day. Like, I wouldn't, like, I'm not following it. What did you have for dinner last night?
Oh, meat and
veg. I had beef.
Yes.
And vegetables, but Irish vegetables. So there was sprouts and cabbage and carrots.
What I think... the danger of a report like this, I think, and I'm somebody who is all for battling climate change. I am somebody who's all for having a sustainable diet and eating well. The problem with a report like this that is so stark and so extreme in its views that it then just paints the whole climate change and food debate with a great big brush.
Yeah.
And it just makes it too easy to kind of ridicule science and say... I'm not doing that. Like, if this report...
like what I've just done.
Exactly. But yeah. If this report said, you know, just like you did, a bit of common sense, try to eat locally, try to, okay, cut down your the amount of meat you eat because you're going to spend more on it, because you're going to look at high welfare animals instead of factory farmed animals, I'd be all for it. But drop your meat consumption by 90%, eat soy that's grown where rainforests used to be, shipped over to you from the other side of the world. Nonsense.
Yeah.
Just too easy to... bash it down.
Yeah, I think it'll actually have just been a storm in a teacup. There'll be no, it'll actually just disappear because there isn't even an argument. You know, you wouldn't even be bothered. It's not often that I'd agree with like Danny Healy Ray, I have to say.
I know.
But on this one. So I think it's just, it'll be gone.
But I guarantee it won't, Max. The sad thing is now you'll be listening to Mr. Healy Ray and Donald Trump and whoever in the future. And when they're criticizing any kind of claims about how agriculture has an impact on climate change, they'll just refer to the nonsense in this report. And when you tie a sensible kind of debate with some spurious science like this, it just makes it too easy to knock down the sensible debate, you know?
Perhaps.
It's very unfortunate.
I have to say, it's not going to make me make any changes, and I don't see it making any changes in this country.
I'd love, there's so much
there's
I would
a lot
love
of
Sorry, change.
Changes that need to happen, but this isn't it.
Now, one thing I would like to talk about on the show, and I'm actually going to try and get the manager of this farm on with us. But on Countryfile last week, there was a report about birds from Hope Farm in the UK. And Hope Farm is a 180-hectare farm, so it's a big farm on Irish kind of scale. Mm. And it was bought by the RSPB and I think the National Trust in the UK. And it's being run as a commercial farm. So it's not organic. They spray and all of the rest of it. But what they want to do is trial farming techniques that are a little bit more sensitive to the environment and to nature. And the results over the last 8 years have just been remarkable. 1,790% increase in the population of birds on the site. Phenomenal. Mm. And there are simple little things that they do there that have made a huge difference. Any corner of the field that's kind of awkward to get to, they've just set it aside for nature. So about 10% of the land now, including hedgerows and so on, are set aside for nature. It's had very, very minimal impact on the income of the farm. It's making money. And yet they've seen a huge increase in insect populations, bird populations, and so on.
And it's not rocket science either, sure it's not?
Not rocket science. They're planting wildflowers and things like phacelia and so on, and cover crops in the awkward corners. They're leaving them alone. And then you get more insects. When you get more insects, you get more birds. Some of the seeds that are produced by these crops that they're planting, that they're leaving over winter, encourage in other things like finches and so on. And it 10% of the land, even if every farmer in Ireland was to do that, there's no way that's a 10% drop in your income. It's just not.
There's a dairy farmer down in Cork in the Blackwater catchment, and he has a project to, he has done something like that. He would have been quite intensive and stuff, and now he's, you know, pulling back from the hedges, and he's been on Countryfile, and he actually got an award, one of the Farming for Nature awards. But he's now involved in a project encouraging other farmers in the catchment to farm in a similar way. And again, you know, not losing income, but farming more sensitively to wildlife and to nature. And that's the way forward.
Yeah, there's a text just in here from Mick. And Mick, you're misunderstanding me. I'm not saying that, like, I know that farmers aren't making any money. I know that it's hard to make a living from agriculture. I'm not saying that farmers need to give up part of their income for nature when things are already a bit tough. But what I'm saying is there are some parts of every farm that are farmed now intensively, particularly on the tillage side, that just don't make any sense to do so. If your return, your margin is so tight on a tillage crop, and yet you have to reverse three or four times into an awkward corner to kind of plough it, and then to spray it, and then to seed it, and then to spray it again, the amount you're making from that little corner of the field is gone. It's actually costing you money to farm it. So set it aside, and there you're actually going to make more money, not lose money. So thanks a million for listening and texting in, Mick, but I think you had me a bit wrong there. Now, we might try and get that man on from Hope Farm at some stage.
Yep, good
idea. Wanted to talk about clever shopping.
Clever shopping, yeah. Well, I suppose it all kind of links into the, well, January theme, as in shopping on a budget maybe, or avoiding food waste. And that's like, avoiding food waste is a sustainable sort of a strategy towards sustainability. So that's what I was going to chat about today. And I just sat down this morning and just did a little list myself. And as I was going through it, I kind of went, I need to remind myself actually of some of these things, because we all fall back into old habits kind of easily enough. And I suppose having a plan is great.
Yes.
So a weekly plan. So, and if you know what you're cooking every day, even just Monday to Friday, then you know what you're going to the supermarket for. You're not just going to go, oh, you know, that looks lovely, buy that, and then it sits in the fridge for 3 weeks and you haven't gotten around to cooking it. Mm. So having a plan does make sense. Cutting down on cost and waste, cooking from scratch also makes sense, because if you're not paying somebody else to process your food, and also you know what you're actually eating and what's in it. And then leftovers. I'm mad for using up leftovers. And also plan your leftovers. So if you're, you know, cooking something on a Tuesday and you're going to be very busy on Wednesday, you can plan to have something left over from Tuesday that you can turn into a dinner on Wednesday. One idea, actually, I was thinking, you know, if you make a stew, sometimes you don't want a stew the second day, you know, you can throw it in the freezer if you want, but you could make like a pasty with leftover stew. You know, you don't want all of the gravy in it and that, so take some of the gravy off and make a pasty. then using seasonal veg, I know we say it, we talk about this all the time and that, but it makes perfect sense. They are cheaper and better value, better for you. They're not coming from so far away. So yeah, now we should be eating like brassicas, cabbages and turnips and kale and all of those kind of ones. Cheaper cuts of meat, regularly go on about that here. But it's perfectly true. Like lap of lamb, it's one that's really cheap and stuff. You might have to order it from your butcher because I suppose they've gotten out of the habit a little bit of people looking for some of those cheaper cuts, but they're delighted to sell it to you, absolutely delighted. And you'd be surprised how much meat you can get for a couple of euro from some of those cuts. Shoulder of lamb is another one that's great value, or neck of lamb, really tasty meat. You're going to have to slow cook it. You're going to have to slow cook any of those cheaper cuts, but they're worth it. Maybe do a double batch or something so you can put half in the freezer afterwards. And then I suppose if you want to, you know, spice things up, use herbs and spices. So get into the habit of using herbs and spices, either fresh or dried herbs, and you can have them store cupboard kind of things. But they always jizz up if you're making an omelette or something and you add parsley to it. You know, little things like that make a difference. And when you're going shopping, it's really easy, you know, to pick up like just a bag of onions or a bag of whatever. But maybe you only wanted three onions and now you've bought five, and two of those are going to end up in the bin in a couple of weeks. Onions mightn't be a great example. They do last quite a while. But so don't just buy what you need. And some supermarkets, it's very hard to actually find anything that's not in bags.
Yeah.
But the vegetable shops are much better for that, actually. Much, much better. They'll have pretty much everything out of bags and stuff, and you can buy just what you need. Another thing, I suppose we've all heard this before, don't chop when you're hungry. Have you ever gone into a supermarket hungry?
Yeah, it's not a great idea.
It's not a great idea.
As soon as you walk in through the door, the bakery tends to be there, and there's cakes and breads and all sorts of stuff, and you end up like the trolley's nearly full by the time you're down the end of the first aisle.
Yeah.
Not a great idea.
Yeah. And this is one for me, actually. You know, you see offers like buy one, get second one half price. I'm a demon for that. Well, I've kind of broken my habit, actually. But that's very easy. And there's no supermarket in the world that's doing it for you. They're just doing it for themselves, really. I often tell myself that. So they're not. You're going to end up with more food than you need. Mm. You didn't come out probably to buy it at all. And now you're buying two of them. So that's kind of, not great value anyway. And then dried beans, beans and...
pulses.
Chickpeas, all of those sort of things and stuff. They're much better value than buying tins. You have to soak them maybe overnight and that, but they also taste much better. It's a much better way to actually get your beans and pulses.
Much lower carbon footprint as well, because although the cans are recyclable, the production of them is fairly costly.
Yeah.
And I heard a great tip during the week, actually, on Twitter. There's a lady I follow, and she goes to the butcher and to her to a local food outlet and brings containers with her. So when she goes to the butcher, she actually brings along a little piece of Tupperware, and she gets her kind of steaks and so on and that.
Oh,
and then she's
right.
Not using plastic because she was feeling guilty about the plastic.
Yeah, very
and,
good.
And in the supermarket, similarly, they have the kind of bulk dispensers where you pay by weight.
Yeah.
And she brings along a container there, and she gets her pulses and her rice and so on from the bulk dispenser, and she's not ending up with bags. I bloody hate the plastic bags that things like rice and pasta come in, because you rip them open, they just tear so easily.
They're not recyclable
pasta
anyway.
And rice,
you can do nothing with them.
And you can't recycle
them.
Hate them. Now, listen, we better take an ad break. And coming up after the ad break, we're going to talk to chiropractor Michael Manny about some ways that we can improve our posture and our life in the office that will have an impact on our health and well-being. But I'd like to come back to that if we can after we talk to Michael, please, Max. Okay, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey as usual. And the show is live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. And we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in any questions or comments that on any of the topics that we're covering today. And there are some tips that have come in for shopping, and we'll bring those to you a little later on after we talk to Michael Mahoney, who is the owner of the John's Green Chiropractic Clinic here in Kilkenny. And that's down, obviously, in John's Green. And the website of the practice is chiropractorkilkenny.com. Michael, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Hello, Francis, and hello to your listeners.
Michael, it's part of our plan for the new year that we're just every week in the month of January, we're talking to people about how we can kind of not take on anything too big or strenuous or life-changing, but small things that we can do to improve our health and well-being. And I thought, no better man than to talk to yourself, because unfortunately we're spending an awful lot of time at the desk.
Very good, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose after the winter time, a lot of us are more sedentary than what we normally would be, less active in general, and our bodies get a little bit weak during the winter time in general. So when we're back out then at the start of the year, getting into the garden, it's very easy to hurt yourself just from simply inactivity over the winter. As you were saying there, a lot of us are very sedentary in our jobs as well, so unless we're doing a little bit of strength work outside of that, go back out into the garden early in the year and can end up hurting ourselves quite easily.
A lot of people launch themselves into new fitness regimes or whatever in the new year, Michael, and tend to start where they left off, even if leaving off was 15 years ago when they were in college. Bound to lead to injuries, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a couple of things that we see in the clinic quite a lot, and one of the biggest things is weakness. Weakness around the core area in your lower back. Now, the average person does around 150 low-level bends a day. So when you're bending, you have a group set of muscles called your core muscles. Most people have heard of those. The stronger within reason those are, the less impact your joints take. So if you go from a winter period where you're less active and you're sitting, the core muscles naturally weaken over that time. Mm-hmm. And then you go out into the garden or even tying shoelaces, putting on socks or whatever it is. The muscles have weakened, and a pretty simple event can actually have absolutely consequences then. So one of the biggest pieces of advice would be to obviously try and keep your body taking over, especially if you're quite sedentary in your job as well.
So a bit of exercise and just mobility in general to prevent those kind of sudden onset injuries that we all hear about. You know, I was just bending over to tie my lace and suddenly my back went out.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually, if it's bending to tie the shoelaces, we all should be able to do something like that. So normally, it's the old saying, the straw that broke the camel's back. Very often, there's a build-up of pressure coming through the body over a period of time, and then that one particular event is like the straw that broke the camel's back. Whatever you've done, just a build up of pressure in the joint, and then it can go with something relatively easy. There are things we can do to help prevent that. Obviously everyone has a slightly different pattern in how they'll be tight or where they'll be weak, but within reason, looking up some very simple stretches, and as long as they're done pain free and start nice and gentle, then they're very beneficial to keep the mobility through the back. But there's a balance between mobility and strength as well. So if you're someone who actually is hypermobile or has too much movement in the first place, and you don't have the strength around your back, then that can obviously lead to problems as well. So there's a balance between kind of finding out, you know, whether you're actually quite tight or whether you're weak, which sometimes a little bit of an assessment can do. But most of us know whether we have strong core or not.
Mm. And then at the desk, Michael, because if listeners are tuned into us now on their headphones in an office where they've been sitting since 8:30 or 9:00 this morning with a short break at lunch, are there things that we can do in our posture at the desk to prevent injury or prevent bad habits forming?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Just to pull back small, like, we have five different vertebrae in our lower back, and when we're standing, they form a little arch where all five of the vertebrae take an equal amount of pressure. So it means the body is working evenly through all the joints. So when we sit at a desk, it puts pressure through the bottom two discs and bottom two joints of our back. So sitting is not a natural position for our body to be in over a long period of time. So you're absolutely right. Putting yourself in the best position is obviously going to limit the amount of pressure going through there. Now, a couple of the basic tips you can do is making sure your monitor, when you're sitting up straight, is the top of your monitor is at eye level. Another one would be making sure that your chair is raised up so your knees are at 90 degrees when you're sitting. If your knees are above your hips when you're sitting, then that places some load back through the lower back. And also having the keyboard kind of close to you so you're not reaching forward in over the desk to do that. There is some stuff you can put up afterwards. It's on the website. It's like five different points you can go through to set up your desk properly. And even for anyone who wants to go a little bit further, there's excellent options out there now with the sit-stand desks where basically with a click of a button, you can bring your desk to a stand-up position, which obviously lessens the pressure again on your back. And, you know, you wouldn't do the whole day standing, but even if you're every hour doing 20 minutes standing, it just, again, lessens the load through the joints, the bottom and the lower back. And you know, 80% of disc injuries are the bottom two joints of your lower back, and that's just because sitting puts too much pressure through those discs.
And I can speak from personal experience, Michael, to say that the pain that's involved in herniating a disc that low down in the back, really, when it happens, you would swear to any god that exists that you'll be a good boy from there on in and you'll do everything if the pain would just go away. But of course,
I mean,
we don't think of it when there's no pain.
And I mean, actually, all the preventative stuff, but it's very often an adverse event that kind of kicks us into motion on that pain, because as you say, the pain is quite excruciating.
Yeah.
And it's not until it goes that you actually realise how much different movements that your back is involved in as well.
Now, what I love about the advice that you give, Michael, is that it's common sense, which we're a big fan of here on the show, but it's not extreme either. So you're not recommending that anybody needs to sign up to a gym or buy any expensive equipment or set aside like an hour and a half of their day every day of the week, are you?
No, absolutely. Like, being consistent with anything you do. So if going to the gym is something that you hate doing, like, you may be able to force yourself to do that for 2-3 weeks, maybe a couple of months. But like, if it's a walk that you enjoy doing, you're a lot better off being consistent over a year doing a half hour walk or going for a swim or whatever movement your body or you like doing is obviously going to be a lot better for your body longer term, or whatever you're going to be consistent at doing. Another thing we tend to see quite a lot is people making New Year's resolutions that are, I'm going to lose weight or I'm going to get fitter. But there's no accountability in their goals. So like, a simple one would be, I'm going to lose weight is one goal. But another goal is, I'm going to lose 10 pounds by 8 weeks, and this is how I'm going to do it, or 8 weeks is too soon, but 3 months, or I'm going to be able to run 5K next form. I'm going to exercise 3 times a week doing it. So you've got to put things in place that are going to allow you to do it.
Very good. Now, you mentioned earlier on that there was a diagram and some tips on how to set up your workstation and so on the website. What's the website address, Michael?
It's www.chiropracticalkenny.com.
Well, that's nice and easy.
And there's a health blog in there, and anyone can just click on it. And it's 5 little points that you can go through. While you're sitting at your desk, you just go through the little tips, and you can adjust those as you need. It'll explain to you what to do to set it up.
One of the things that I did actually was to set a little reminder in my calendar on Outlook in the office to go off every now and again until I get into the habit of reassessing my sitting position, because I would go in the morning with the good intentions, I'd move the keyboard close, I'd get myself set up in that position, and then sure enough, if it occurred to me an hour and a half later, I was slouched over, the keyboard had moved away from me. So I set up for a little while a reminder on Outlook that went off every 45 minutes or so. And for a start, it inspired me to get up and get away from the desk, even if it was just for 5 or 10 minutes to go for a walk and stretch. Yeah. And then when I came back, I re-established that sitting position again. And before long, like, these things only take, you know, 10 or 20 times to do, and then they're a habit.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of things are bad habits, and the more you catch yourself doing them, the more you can stop that thing, especially with women, but men as well, is like crossing your legs under your desk. And a lot of people will say, you know, I catch myself several times during the day doing it. And maybe at the start, you do need to set a reminder. It might be every 10 minutes at the start, and you might find yourself crossing your legs and you don't even know. And then you uncross them. But the more it becomes a habit not to do it, obviously the
easier it is.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, if you go and get stuck into something for 2 hours in a bad position, in a position that we're not really designed to be in, then of course, you know, that's going to lead to trouble longer term and short term as well.
Now, Michael, what we're planning on doing on the show during the year is little reminders of these. So when spring hits again and people are starting to get out into the garden, we might have you on again to talk to us a little bit about that core muscle exercises again, and things that we can do to prevent injury in the garden. Would that be all right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the one thing to emphasize is, anything you embark on, whether it's walking, whether it's a strength program, whether it's anything, everything done pain-free. And as you say, you know, most of us aren't as fit as we were back in college, so you do have to start at a baseline. Test yourself out, see how you wake up the next morning. if that was all right, then you can up it then a small little bit again.
Michael, you're a gentleman. That's Michael Mahoney there of John's Green Chiropractic Clinic here in Kilkenny, down in John's Green, not surprisingly. And the website that Michael was referring to is chiropractorkilkenny.com, or you could just Google Chiropractor Kilkenny. And on there, there's a health tips section, and I strongly recommend you have a read. And Michael puts up a new article every month on things that you can do to improve your posture, your well-being and your exercise, so that you prevent injury and then you don't have to go to him for his chiropractic services, which I think is very magnanimous of him, trying to put himself out of business. So that's chiropractorkilkenny.com. Now, Mags, we were talking about clever shopping and stuff before
clever
the
shopping,
break.
Yeah, and storing your food correctly is important as well, just to to give it the shelf life that you should, so you're not going to waste food, so you're not going to be throwing it out. And also keeping your fridge clutter-free, so there's not like yogurt stuff down the back that have been forgotten about going off. So keeping a check on what's in the fridge. And one thing I thought of, you buy something or you've something left over from something and you don't know what to do with it, just Google, how will I cook, whatever.
Google is fantastic
and stuff.
For that.
It is. Eat your skins. Do you eat your potato skins?
I love my potato skins.
I don't eat them in the summer, or baked potatoes. I love the skin of a baked potato. But that's really healthy.
Most of the nutrition in the potato.
Most of the nutrition is just under the skin.
That's
right,
yeah.
And lots of vegetables you don't actually need. Like even, I suppose young carrots and that, you don't need to actually peel them. And if you do peel them, just take the very, very, very tiny amount off. Because all of that's just like, if you're not composting, it's literally going into landfill somewhere. And then freeze anything that you've got left over. Or if you've bought too much bread, put it in the freezer and you can take it out, slice at a time. And never waste bread, I think. So you can crumb it if you want, if you've got it left over, and put it in the freezer for something else. Or you can use bread.
I think you have a great appreciation for bread because you make bread. And what you see in a lot of chef training schools now, or any of the cookery schools, is that they're trying to encourage people to grow food. Because when you grow it, when you grow that carrot, you know how much effort went into it, and you're going to make good use of it. And the same with all of the veg. So if you have a connection to where the food comes from, you're more likely to make more of it.
Yes.
Whereas if it's just 39 cents for a very, very large bag in a supermarket, there's very little value on that. And you start to measure your time against the 39 cent.
No, there is the value on that, but the environmental cost of that is enormous, because it has been shipped to the supermarket from somewhere in a truck. So there's the fuel cost, and then you're going to throw out half it. So there's the cost to you and the cost to the environment of it being disposed. So I suppose we can't just think about the actual physical cost of us paying for something. Another thing that I was thinking of, if you don't feel you're a good cook, do a class or ask a friend. Or if you don't want to do any of those things, just look it up on YouTube. And also, don't be intimidated by, like, we see all of this beautiful food all the time, either on Instagram or on cookery programs and that, and everything looks fabulous and stuff. If you think about it, if you're by yourself in your kitchen, that person on the thing has got like a team of people, and they've practiced that dish probably a few times, maybe it's not edible, it might look fabulous. So don't, be trying to aspire to that. Cook something that you're happy with how it tastes and how it looks. So don't be kind of put off by, I think, there's so many cookbooks and so many food shows and everything now, but we actually tend to cook less. I just wonder, is there some link to that, that we're actually sort of disheartened by our ability, or our perceived ability, and what we see on TV, and that we stop cooking?
As with everything, it can be hard to get over the initial disappointment in our own performance when we take up a new hobby. So if you were to take up tennis, you wouldn't expect to be able to go out and belt around a ball with Martina Navratilova or one of the sisters.
Yeah,
you just wouldn't. So similarly, Williams, that's it. Similarly, when you go into the kitchen, you might be following a Jamie Oliver recipe, or you might have the Yota Mottolenghi cookbook at home, but you can't expect to be as good as these lifelong professionally trained chefs.
No.
So if you go in, you need practice to develop your own skills. And if you're able to put in the time and create some of the disasters along the way, as well as good things, you'll learn some of the skills to help you improve. And there's a fantastic book which I'm reading at the moment, and I hope that we'll get to speak to the author on the show sometime in the next few weeks. But Midnight Chicken. If you are thinking about just taking up cooking, or if you are very you're not at all happy with your skills in the kitchen, and you want a gentle book that is a pleasure to read as well as one that gives you the basics and guides you through along the path to kind of improving your cooking, I cannot recommend the book highly enough. Midnight Chicken, it's called, and I hope we'll speak to the author on the show sometime soon. Anything else?
Go into your butcher and ask them, like, what's good value today? And they'll be happy to tell you. And you'll be amazed, I've said that earlier, about what you can buy with a few euro.
The lads in Grogan and Brown, like
or in O'Brien's, or any of the butchers and that. They will. And also then I was thinking, you know, if you have a Sunday roast, all the different things you can do with a Sunday roast on Monday. And I know you're mad into your noodles on a Monday, and we do that some days too. But also you can do, there's different kind of like salads you can make with leftovers, or you can use it in a pasta. I sometimes make, if I have leftover ham, if I've had like a nice ham, pasta with ham and peas and garlic and cream and parsley. And that's a perfectly nice Monday evening tea. Or there's a very nice beef, if you've got some leftover roast beef, with kind of mustardy lentils and mint. I'll actually put that recipe up on the website. And that's a really nice thing you could take to work with you in a Tupperware or have it at home. That's quite a nice meal, actually.
All of the podcasts of the show are available on thekitchengarden.ie every week. And there in the description of the show, we tend to put up any recipes that we cover during the show. But we're a bit tight today for time. So what we might do is, if we print up some of those, or if you pass on some of those recipes to me, they'll go up with the podcast on thekitchengarden.ie. But we better take our second ad break. And thanks again to those who have gotten in touch with a couple of texts to read out once we get back. But we're here live today from 4 to 5, and you can send in any of your questions or comments to us while we're live on the air. But we'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. And I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here as usual with Mags Morrissey. And thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for those of you who got in touch with the show. Now, we were talking about frugal shopping and so on, but we went on a road trip last week.
We did.
And we went down to the very romantically named Slobs.
Slobs.
In Wexford.
Wexford Wildfowl Reserve, which is just, if you go through Wexford Town and you're heading out towards Curraghclough, there, maybe about 2 miles out that road, there's a little turn off to your right, and it's down
almost in like an industrial estate, so it's out past a load of garages where they're selling cars and so on. So
you'll see the brown sign, the nature reserve sign, and it's down there a mile or something, but it's a fabulous place to visit. And now this is the time of the year to visit. It's wintering birds that are there, so it's well worth the trip.
Today would have been a fabulous day down there, like nice and dry and bright. Of course, it was closed today, but that's beside the point.
It's open most days. Mm. It's open pretty much every day for this time of the year.
So it's not just a dirty, wet, muddy part of the coast. This is a man-made environment, and there's an interpretive centre there where you can go, and viewing towers and so on.
So it's very civilised.
Nicely set up.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful setting in the harbour too, isn't it? It's very, well, it's obviously very flat, but it's quite a peaceful kind of spot. You've got the harbour on one side, and then you have farmland on the other, and then to the east you've got the Raven Nature Reserve, so you can see all of the Scots pines along the horizon on that side. So it's quite a nice scenic spot, actually, and really quiet. Well, it was very quiet last Friday. There's one or two others there. So,
And you can look back across the bay then to Wexford Town as well, but it's fairly...
You can see down to Rosslare then, the other side of the harbour. So.
But it's not... It's very, very quiet and a very, very rural area, and it feels very natural. You know, it feels like a part of Ireland that's just been left alone. But of course it's not. It's managed for the birds.
And it's man-made. So back in 1840, and it took us a little while to work this one out why they did it, they built a sea wall and reclaimed the land and pumped the water out from behind the sea wall. But this was done as partly as a famine relief project. So there would have been hundreds of people working on it. I think we read there was donkeys and carts that were moving the stone around. And it's quite a feat of engineering, really, isn't it?
This is a huge part of the coast, a low-lying part of the coast, where it was obviously a shallow part of the estuary. And they drew a line across a kind of curved inlet. And they said, we're going to build a wall straight across there, and everything behind it that is now below sea level, or we'll pump all of the water out of there, and it'll kind of, you know, I presume they spread gypsum on it or something to get rid of the salt. But I read down there, within 3 years, they were harvesting barley
crops,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
It amazing.
Transformed really quickly.
And I don't know how many thousands of acres they reclaimed from the sea. Did you pick up on that?
I know their nature reserve is only 200 hectares. So I don't know how many.
Must have been a couple of thousand acres.
A couple of thousand, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know exactly. So there's a pumping station. So it's a beautiful house or a structure that was built over the pump station, which would have pumped the water out, and still does apparently. Mm. Apparently, it's still pumping the water out. So that's how the rainwater is pumped out back into the sea.
It's amazing when you stand on the wall and you look over at the sea to the right. We were there at just about high tide, and look back to the left, and the sea level, it was above the height of my truck.
It's about two meters. Sea level is about 2 meters above the level of the slopes.
Wow!
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And then I suppose we went to see the birds.
Yes.
But it's the whole history of it is quite interesting as well. So it's jointly managed by the National Parks and Wildlife Services and Birdwatch Ireland. So they have the Wildfowl Reserve, which is all part of Wexford Harbour and Slobs Nature Reserve, Special Protection Area, so which is designated for birds, which would be a huge site. So that was nearly as far as we could see when we were down there. And the nature reserve was established in 1969, and really because of the green and white fronted geese that were using the area. So we spotted lots of them.
Now we did. We saw a few of these geese while we were down there, didn't we?
There was only 8,500 estimated to be there. So
there were so many. They were flying in clouds of geese, but a significant part of the world's population.
45% of the world's population winter.
Phenomenal.
There, yeah. They use some other areas in Wexford, actually, but that's a very important stronghold for them. They also go to Scotland. So Scotland and Ireland are where all of these birds, all of this species, actually winter. And then they'll head back to Greenland in the spring.
Now, some very exotic looking geese and ducks while we're there. So the white-fronted geese were the kind of stars of the show because of the sheer number of them. But there were Brent geese there and Canada geese.
Yep.
And what I thought was remarkable.
Barnacle geese and
barnacle
stuff.
Geese
and I was taking
I was taking
a bit of effort to work out, wasn't it, identify them all as quickly. You know, they do move and that.
Well, they don't stand in groups all by themselves.
No, they mix and match. And they're kind of a variety of greys and blacks and whites and that. But it's quite exciting. There was also Hooper swans, Buick swans as well. And in the hides, they had two really super duper telescopes.
Those spotting scopes. So in the actual interpretive centre itself, they have a kind of three-storey tower that with a staircase in it. And at the top, you'd see very typical shape of those kind of nature hides with the little wooden flaps that fold up at about eye level when you're sitting down, and two massive spotting scopes that bring you right into the birds.
Yeah,
you know, even if they're kind of 800 or 900 metres away, you're able to pick out the details on their beak. Fabulous scopes. And we brought along some binoculars as well. So a great place for kids to go, and there's loads of information on the walls and exhibits and stuff for kind of kids to appreciate, and a display downstairs of how birds have evolved from the dinosaurs.
Yes,
which kids would love.
They would love that. Yeah, and birds' eggs and everything and stuff. So it was it's a nice place. And we also spotted some curlews, which are quite scarce now. So that was quite nice to see, actually.
Lovely.
So there was if you think there's loads of other, the whole area is managed for these birds. So there was a lot of kind of grassland fields, and then there was fields of fodder beet where they were feeding as well. And we spotted lots of oyster catchers actually out on the seaside side of the wall, and loads of diving ducks that were so far away we actually couldn't, they just looked like little black diving ducks.
But they were back down that kind of causeway wall. There was another little hide and a freshwater lake in there where there was a height of view, and a completely different population of birds, just 200-300 metres away where all the geese were and so on. A population of diving ducks, 6-7 varieties the poster described, bobbing away in the water. Gorgeous little birds. Really, really lovely place.
Over 250 species have actually been identified as visiting the reserve at various stages.
Wow.
Which is a lot of birds. So they would get a lot of kind of migrants, you know, in transit in autumn and spring. So birds that might just drop off for, I don't know, hours, days or whatever,
yeah, yeah,
and then move on and stuff. But 250 species is a lot of birds.
That is an awful lot,
yeah,
of birds.
I suppose it's monitored constantly, as in there's a wildlife ranger there. So very little will actually be missed. Mm. And that part of Wexford anyway, it's kind of the first, you know, if you're coming from Europe and stuff, it's the first point that the birds will get to, so they'll often stop there. And I suppose it's probably a welcoming looking spot, really.
Well, there were plenty of feeders up around the place as well, so it's not just, they were feeding birds on a kind of industrial scale where whole fields had been set aside with fodder material in it for the birds. But there were also just around the interpretive centre then a variety of kind of little bird feeders on which there were the smaller birds,
yeah,
more familiar birds.
Yeah, and the interpretive centre, I suppose, is, you know, big on the education part of it. So yeah, it's well worth a visit, isn't it?
It really is. And we had a bit of a competition that day down there to see who could spot the most species of birds, didn't we?
I think I won, did I?
hang on, can we just rewind there a little bit now? But we didn't get the count up to 250. But
no.
There,
no, we might have to go back.
A lot. We did spot a lot of birds.
Yeah, a lot of birds. And it's just nice to see the volumes of them actually out in the fields all grazing away and hear the chatter, and then when they're flying in and that, just the noise of their flight. So, yeah.
And unusual to hear swans making noise, because all of the swans that we'd see along the canals or rivers or in the city, they're mute swans. So they're the ones that live here all of the time, and they don't really make any noise except when they're flying overhead. If you manage to hear that, that's fabulous. But the ones down there are kind of hooping away to each other the whole
true,
time.
Actually. Yeah, that's true.
As you know, most kind of flock
and they're all intermingled with each other in that.
We did see some geese behave just as your geese generally do. Mm-hmm. Look cross and bullying. Chasing off a few ducks, I remember.
That just seems to go with the geese life.
But it is funny, like variations in these birds, and these are wild birds, but their behaviours, a lot of their behaviours, putting the head down, running kind of horizontally, you know, at something to scare it off.
Yeah.
Very like the domesticated goose. We're not that far removed from them, really.
No, I suppose not, actually. So most of the birds that would come there, so they'd be coming from like Greenland, Arctic Canada, Scandinavia, and into Arctic Russia. So quite a journey to get down to the slobs for their winter.
Really is. And when will they be heading back then?
March, April. And I know the Greenland white-fronted, while they have nice grounds here, they have had problems with breeding, so their numbers would be under pressure. They've had problems with breeding in Greenland, got to do with just habitat loss there and changes. So their wintering grounds here, I suppose, are very important. So they go back to Greenland kind of as well as possible,
right,
to breed before they come back again next October.
God, it's hard to believe that even in Greenland, which has such a tiny population, there is pressure on kind of breeding grounds.
I think it maybe got to do with global warming, actually.
Mm.
I must just check that, but and I did read it recently, but it just, the details just gone out of my head.
It's incredible how an animal becomes so specialised to suit the environment around it that even small changes in that environment can have huge, huge impacts on them. Yeah, it's very sad. But the Wild Fowl Reserve in Wexford is well worth a visit. And from Kilkenny, you're probably looking at about a 90-minute drive, would you?
An hour and 15 minutes.
An hour and 15 minutes, or 75 minutes.
Yeah.
And then on the way back in, just before you get to Wexford, on the left-hand side, there's a little hotel, the Riverview Hotel, where we went in for a cup of coffee. Very, very nice. You don't have to go in through kind of Wexford Town then or anything like that. So it's a very easy drive.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and well worth a visit. So that's the Wexford Wild Fowl Reserve. And actually, on the way in, there's another Wild Fowl Reserve right beside it. That seems to be a kind of more local run one that wasn't part of the RSPB. But anyway,
it's probably part of the whole SPA, actually,
right,
the Special Protection Area. So the whole of the harbour is a designated site.
If you're looking for something to do with the kids any day soon, before all of those migratory birds head back to their summer homes, I'd strongly recommend a visit to Wexford Town, and then out from Wexford Town on the Camolin Road, about a couple of miles, on the
Curraghclough
Road. Road, a couple of miles, and then you turn right down to the Wexford Wildfowl Reserve. But Google has all of the details, and they have websites as well.
Yep, they do.
Now, I've spent an awful lot of time out in the garden over the last little while because it's been so mild that I've just loved being outside. A lot of tidying I've been doing. I've been gathering up some... a couple of trees came down, so I went at those with the saw and then cleaning up around them, leaving some tops in piles, you'll be glad to hear, for the hedgehogs. They won't see any benefit to it this winter, but hopefully by next winter, when that's all kind of like formed a kind of green mess, that they might want to spend next winter in.
They might. I don't think they've really hibernated that much this winter. I've seen hedgehogs relatively recently, actually, because it's been so mild.
So mild.
Yeah. But really, they may go in for, if it gets cold now, they may go in for a while, all right.
A handful of frosts. Really?
Yeah, you could count them, like, literally.
You really could. Yeah. And we're getting towards the end of January. A lot of people saying, oh, we'll pay for a jet.
People keep saying that.
We'll have a rubbish summer now, but I don't know. Hopefully not. But it is giving us an excellent opportunity to kind of get out into the garden.
It is, yeah.
My snowdrops are up and open. And such a jolly, beautiful flower. My God, I love them so much. And I wouldn't have expected those now until the end of January or start of February.
Oh, right.
But I'm delighted that 2 years ago I was talking on the show about splitting some snowdrops that at Crowan when I moved there. There was one very large clump. So I don't know whether it was one bulb that had split over the years or whether one packet had just been planted in one area. But 2 years ago I took up all of those bulbs, and there must have been, 100, and split them and scattered them through what I have, what I call a woodland garden out at Crowan. And now, no flowers last year, but this year in abundance.
Oh, cool.
So there's lots and lots of little snowdrops all over that little woodland garden area. It's gorgeous. So get out and do some tidying if you can, or just enjoy the outside. I've also continued cutting the grass and spread some compost on the beds because they were nice and dry. So the worms will do their job now, bringing the goodness of the compost down into the soil. And there were a few kind of untidy clumps of leaves left around in areas that had been a bit boggy, but are really, really dry now and easy to get into.
Yeah, the ground is actually nice and solid, isn't it?
It
for
really
doing those
is.
Kind of things. Yeah,
it
I
really
did
is.
Some lots of jobs this week too, actually.
Good.
And it's really enjoyable to do them at the moment.
It is.
And it's perfect
even if
weather.
It's even if it's cold, you can stick on a warm jacket, so long as it's not wet and you're not, you know, it's not raining, and you can wrap up against the cold, as they say. Now, we've run out of time, unfortunately, in the kitchen garden for another week, and we do hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter. I'm at NesbittF, or Mags is at Mags Morrissey, or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage to send us in any questions or comments or ideas for features that you'd like to hear on the show. And remember, the podcast of this or any of the other shows are available on thekitchengarden.ie. We'll be back next week on Community Radio Kilkenny City. Stay tuned for Morris.